Welcome to the Botcast, featuring Nigel Bottrell. The Botcast is an Entrepreneur's Circle production, exclusively for EC members.
Hey, Botcast time. Welcome, everybody. To what is it? It's a festive Botcast.
It is.
Do you feel like singing?
No, not really.
Perhaps best not. Maybe at the end. Who knows? Wouldn't be the first time. But I've got another Botcast virgin with me this month, making her first appearance on the podcast, and she's travelled a long way to be here, and she has developed something of a reputation for herself, not as a Christmas carol singer.
No, definitely not.
But as someone who is rather more practical than most others in her profession. Is that fair?
Yes, probably.
Okay. She's very knowledgeable, and she's someone that I have had many fascinating conversations with in the times that we have known each other. She's been part of Mastermind in mm-hmm. the past,
yeah.
And she runs a very successful business which bears her initials in the name.
It does. Okay. But people don't always get that.
No, I didn't get it. I'll
you
be honest.
Didn't get it.
Took me 6 months. But Donna Obstfeld is here from DOHR.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yes.
And and we're here to talk about the worst thing in business. People. The staff.
The staff. Can't live with them, can't live without them.
Well, Donna, it's very good to have you here.
Thank you.
And we're tackling a topic which the reality is there is no way of avoiding. Anyone who has ever built a business that's had any kind of success over any period of time has had to engage with and indeed, you know, hire and everything else, people, staff.
Yeah,
we kind of need them. We can't succeed without them, even though often we might wish that we could.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just chatting beforehand, and what we've come up with, we think there are, I thought there were six stages to talk about,
mm-hmm.
but Donna thinks there's seven.
There's an important one that you forgot.
Okay, so when it comes to people, you've got to find them, you've then got to kind of hire them,
mm-hmm.
select them, yep. and choose them and offer them, you've then got to manage them,
yep.
you've then got to get them to perform,
mm-hmm.
deal with all their issues.
Yes.
And we've got some funny stories there.
Yes.
And then you've got to fire them. And that's it for me. Find them, hire them, manage them, get them to perform, deal with issues, and at some point they're going to leave. What else could there possibly be?
They might want some money. You need to reward them.
Okay, so we're going to reward
as
well. And
you do that quite well from what I hear.
Okay, maybe too well. So seven topics.
Yep.
Well, we've got reasonably quick fire.
Yep.
A lot of people driving along when they listen to the podcast,
okay.
you know. The podcast is listened to by most people in the car.
Okay.
So we've got to be very careful that we don't say anything too...
No, I'll try and keep it clean.
Too dramatic, and so where should we? We might as well start at the beginning.
It's a life cycle, so before you can fire them, you actually have to have them.
Okay. All right. So we're going to. So in terms of finding good staff.
So this one's right up your street because it's actually marketing. It's about understanding what you need. And then understanding where those people hide.
Yeah.
And the way in which you find them, in when I started off 20 plus years ago, you used to put an advert in the paper, or
yeah.
you used to go to a recruitment agency.
Yeah.
And that's changed now, and people are using much more diverse ways of attracting people. So there's still the careers fairs, but there's also through specialist providers, specialist agencies,
yep.
but there's also LinkedIn and Facebook.
Yep.
And social media has changed the way in which people recruit. Even the agencies now use social media and yeah. LinkedIn and Facebook.
We had David Costa, who many of you will know from Flowers Unlimited. He recently acquired, I say recently, it was early this year, but he acquired a new... He bought an existing florist shop
yes.
in Southampton,
yeah.
and he wanted to make some changes to the staff there. And he ran a Facebook ad campaign, mm-hmm. and that cost him like £3.50 or something. Yeah. And six people turned up for an interview, and he hired.
It very much depends on the type of
yes.
person
yeah.
and the location. So, unbelievably,
and the role as well, of
and
course,
absolutely, yeah. unbelievably, I used LinkedIn to hire in Johannesburg in South Africa. And we were inundated with 300 really, really well-qualified, appropriate people for a tech job. And I didn't even have to... didn't even have to go out there, actually lined up the interviews and the client went out there. But what actually happened was she came back with a completely different view of the market to the one she'd gone out with.
Interesting.
But LinkedIn enables you to get to people that you wouldn't otherwise be able to reach, especially where you use the groups and the discussions. And if you're already networked into your industry, so that was a very specific tech company that had a great following already in the African continent, and they just got it to share. They just got people to share the job to get people to apply. I wouldn't use LinkedIn for a florist in Southampton. Facebook is very much the
so
local.
It's a combination there.
Yeah.
What was the lager that refreshed the parts that other beers cannot reach?
Carlsberg.
See, I can't remember whether it was Carlsberg or Heineken.
Oh, Heineken?
Is it?
Heineken.
We're feeling bad now.
And Heineken, it was Heineken.
And if we had somebody here with a little, a little Google piece. Oh, me neither. No.
Don't touch the stuff.
But, okay, so kind of funny, and you're right about the how it has changed quite a lot. And the other thing that I always want to bear in mind when it comes to finding people is that the average person might change jobs, like, if we said it's like every 2 years.
And it's probably less,
but it might even be a bit less frequent than that, but even every 2 years, that would mean it's every 100 weeks. So if you run a job ad on a job site, which is the other route we can go down, if you run a job ad
four weeks is a typical bundle.
But then you're only going to, only 4% of people are looking to move
in that time frame.
Yeah. Therefore, you're not 96% of people in your market are not going to see your ad because they're not looking.
That's where headhunters can be quite...
That's my point, exactly. If you rely on job ads, just remember that, and it's usually the best people are not looking.
No.
The best people that are performing well, that have been rewarded well, that the superstars in businesses, a lot of them are not looking all the time
but
by any means.
That's where LinkedIn comes into play. Because with LinkedIn... If you're in the discussion groups where those people are, you can show them those ads.
Yeah, that's true.
And they don't have to be registered with
the agency. So we're violently agreeing.
We are.
Okay, well, that's good then. So we'll probably find where to hire them.
You're going to hire them.
So you know, I've got some fairly radical kind of approach that we've done on hiring from our X Factor recruitment process, which is all mapped out.
The first thing is you've got to get them to turn up. And I know that there are some people within EC, especially when we were going through the apprenticeship recruitment, that could not get people to turn up. So even though they'd phoned them, they texted them, they knew that they were coming on the day, they didn't turn up.
So what can you do about that as a business owner?
That's about positioning yourself as an employer of choice. That's about you understanding that it's a two-way process.
But that's an easy thing to say, and we're on good terms here. I'm not going to upset you too much here. But becoming an employer of choice, when I'm a small business about to hire my second or third or even first employee, it sounds a bit corporate. So what you actually mean by that, it's got to be somewhere that somebody might want to come and work.
Yeah.
That's what that means.
So people buy in to your business. So actually I think I'm quite a good example. So I was using the My Mags magazine, Allen, and doing regular advertorials in there, and I did a year's worth of advertorials. Can't say I got any business from it, but I got two members of staff from it, where people had seen what I'd been writing, had looked us up online and contacted me and said, I want to come and work for you.
Positioning, isn't it?
And it's positioning. Yeah. It's getting people to buy in to your passion, to your dream. Being flexible. So I have part-time workers because they tend to be mums who have come out of city life. It doesn't work all the time. It doesn't always work for my own business.
So when you get some applicants in and you've got to decide which ones you're going to meet.
Yes.
Any advice on that? Do you subscribe to the Ricky Gervais approach? It was in The Office. I said it was David mm-hmm. Brent approach. Do you remember this one? When so he was doing some recruitment, and he had a whole big pile of CVs, and he said, obviously, I can't do a Ricky Gervais voice. But he had this big pile of CVs, and he basically just split the pile in two and swiped half of the pile into the bin. And he said, some people are born unlucky, and I don't want unlucky people working for me.
I haven't seen that episode. Years and years and years and years ago, I ran a school leavers recruitment campaign. So people who just had their A-levels mm-hmm. for a, for Dixon Stores Group.
Yeah.
And we went down around and we did all the milk rounds and at the universities, but we were also targeting schools, and some of the school leavers were going to those milk rounds. And we had 680 applications. And they haven't got a lot to show at that stage. Yeah, and certainly technology wasn't where it is now.
Yeah.
And it was very much a tick sheet.
Yeah.
It was very much, have they got this? Have they got that? If not, no. And you had literally 10, 20 seconds. And once you've narrowed it down, you then started looking in more detail.
Yeah.
And then we went around the country and we interviewed probably about 150 employees, because we needed them all around the country. So 150 applicants.
That's a big old undertaking, that's
it. It is. But these were potential. These were trainee store managers.
Yeah, okay.
At 18.
Yes, yeah. But it's why my X Factor process works so well,
absolutely.
Though, you know, because we can invite 18 or 20 people to come for selection.
How many turn up?
Well, never everybody. I think the worst we ever had was 8 out of 15, so it's only just over half, isn't it? Probably typically 2/3 or 3/4 will turn up, because we do position ourselves quite well.
Yes.
But we can get from 20 to a job offer in 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Because we bring them all in together, and what we go through, and the process is in the Achieve 365, in one of the implementation plans, and it's all documented there. We're not going to talk about it here, but hiring can be incredibly time consuming for business owners that haven't got the time. Because that's also very true, isn't it?
Yeah. All the skills.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So what should you do then? If you haven't interviewed before, and what should I do to give myself the best chance? Because people default, and I know I've done this a lot in the past and arguably still do, because I just hire people that I like.
Yeah. And there's also people hire people like themselves.
Yes.
And
that's why I like them.
That can also get you into trouble, and you have to be careful not to discriminate as well. Because there's this whole
bit. You're going all HR on me, Donna.
I know. I once had a letter where somebody wrote to me threatening, this is when I was at another retailer, threatening employment tribunals and all sorts. And I was like, I don't remember this person. It was about 2 months before the turn of the century, 20,000. And he wrote a letter saying, I'm taking you to an employment tribunal because you've discriminated against me on grounds of my age. I'm over 40. My nationality, I'm German. My disability, I've got a limp. We actually pulled the CV, and you couldn't tell any of that from the CV.
But so you had a one-legged 41-year-old German?
Who, yes. And I wrote back and said something
racist.
Like, please note my surname or something like that. And if you wish to come and discuss this, then fine. But yeah, and you are going to get people that try their luck, even if they haven't got any grounds for doing so.
Yeah, but it's difficult. I wrote a cheque to somebody once to get rid of the problem. And it was someone that
pre-employment or post-employment?
I'd never met.
Oh.
And I never employed them.
Yeah.
And they were, we hired some temporary staff to help us at an exhibition in London. And we hired these two temporary staff through an agency. And the exhibition was a lot quieter than we thought it was going to be. And one girl was Eastern European and one was English. And at lunchtime, it was a 2-day thing.
Yeah.
And at lunchtime on the first day, my member of staff, there was other things that happened, but she basically let the Eastern European go.
Yeah.
And next thing I know, I was served with tribunal papers for racial discrimination, because she wasn't British. And I thought, oh, no, that's ridiculous. She can swing for that. It's ridiculous. And but of course it progressed, and then you get all the papers, and I'm now faced with a tribunal in London, rostered for 2 days.
Yeah.
I'm going to take staff down and incur all the costs and everything else. So I settled it for £1,000, which I won't lie, did stick in my throat a lot, because I came very close to pursuing, because that was clearly it, this was a lawyer, a little tin pot lawyer, actually making money out of doing this.
And it's really, we'll probably come on to this when we get to the managing issues, but it's really hard for employers because the weight is so heavily on the side of the employee that all an employee has to do. Now, please make sure that you haven't got your employees listening to this with you. Uh-huh. But all an employee has to do is to raise an employment tribunal claim. And a lot of employers will pay to make it go away. Yeah. Because the cost of even defending something that they haven't got a leg to stand on, in terms of time, in terms of solicitors, in terms of...
Yeah.
You know, 2 days of your time in London, plus all the preparation.
Well, this is why we got rid of it.
Absolutely,
and dealt with it. And it is a fine balance. It's been made harder, hasn't it, for employees to raise a tribunal. It's more expensive now, isn't it?
There is a cost. If they're not earning anything or they're earning very little, that cost is actually met for them.
Oh, is it?
It was actually in the news last week, and Frances O'Grady...
Who?
From the TUC. was... She's the head of the TUC, Trade Union Congress.
Thank you, pardon.
I
thought it was Len Murray.
I won't say you're showing your age. And she was saying that actually they want the amount of money removed so that that doesn't become a barrier. A little plug, I've just written a white paper which has been going out this week on how to avoid employment tribunals, and somebody's come back to me and says, oh yes, but Frances O'Grady said last week that people aren't going to the employment tribunals. Well, no, they're not getting as far as the employment tribunals, because so many employers are having to pay to get rid of them, and there's no equivalent for an employer to take a rogue employee to an employment tribunal. That's my new campaign.
Okay, yeah, you can sign me up to that one. I'm conscious of time today, so we can only skip along some of these things here, but it's interesting. So we look at finding and hiring them. And what advice in terms of... let's assume things are going to go well here. You know, so how do we get the best out of our people? So we can perhaps amalgamate these next two together, really. In terms of how we manage people effectively and how we get them to perform at the right kind of level.
Okay, so really, really back to basics and the really... boring stuff. A contract of employment.
Yes.
Which is
very important.
It is really important, and a lot of employers, especially small employers, don't like to give it because they feel that it's a noose around their neck. But actually,
it's the opposite, isn't it?
It's actually the opposite.
I would say that as well.
It gives you a mandate to manage.
Yeah.
It tells you what you have to do as the employer. It tells the employee what they can expect from you as the employer. But if it's well written, and I'm not talking about the 1 or 2 page statement of terms and conditions, because that tells you nothing. If it's well written, especially with small businesses that don't need an employee handbook, then that lays out, you know, who they can go and work for if they leave your employment, that they can't pinch your staff, they can't pinch your customers.
Yeah, but the thing is...
They're hard to enforce.
As someone that's worried of this, they're impossible to enforce because you could only stop people doing stuff for a fairly short window, typically six months anyway. And by the time you find out they've even done it, you've lost a few weeks.
And
then getting it into court, and you end up saying, well, this is just not worth either situation. People know a couple, 18 months ago now. And the reality of it is, I was looking at, a cost of £20,000 for what would have been like about six, by the time it all happened, would have been about 6 weeks protection.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult to enforce those clauses.
It's difficult to enforce, but again, I hope... you haven't got your employees listening to this. It's sometimes, and with a lot of people, enough to put them off. It's enough to make them think twice.
Yeah.
I think I got this idea from you, actually.
This is our new clause.
We're beginning to do it. Mm. And until it's tested in court, we won't know whether or not it is fully...
The clause is something that we put in place, and all my staff signed new contracts actually at the start of this year. With that, that was an interesting process, by the way. Well, yes. We had to go through
consultation,
yep. But we went through it all properly and got it all in place. And this clause basically says that you can't take our customers and you can't take our staff in one part, but it then says in the second part, and if you do. Mm-hmm. Then you agree to pay us £5,000 introduction fee per customer that you do business with, and £20,000 introduction fee for any member of staff that you hire. And the reason for that is because in that situation, then all I have to do then is just raise an invoice, and I can then sue on the invoice, which is a lot easier than suing under employment law.
You can even take it to a small claims court.
Yes. And so there's the contract.
Yes.
And there's the evidence. And there's the contract. And there's the invoice.
Yeah.
And that's why we've done that. And I think, as you say, you know, it's as much until it's properly tested and things are. But as a statement of intent and making it very clear, it's.
And we took somebody on in the summer, and that's absolutely in her contract. And we've discussed with a number of clients now, this is an option. So one of our clients phoned us a few weeks ago, and they found their van back in the yard. They're a gardening company. Van and keys back in the yard on a Monday morning, and the guy had gone off, and he had approached every single one of the clients that he'd been looking after, and they'd had 11 cancellations in 2 days of retained contracts that they'd had for a number of years. And I said to him, you've got a contract, it has the clauses in it which enables you to follow, but there wasn't this raise an invoice clause, which meant that he had to go through the courts and he had to get an injunction, and he didn't want to do that. And at the end of the day, you can have almost anything you want written in a contract of employment as long as it's legal.
Really?
Ooh, as long as it's legal.
Okay.
But you have to be prepared to enforce it.
Mm.
And a lot of people, when it comes to the crunch, it's not worth the time, effort, stress and money to enforce it. So that's one way you can manage.
Leads to the point of saying, well, what's the point then? That's the challenge for smaller businesses. Well, if that's the case, because I'm not going to spend £25,000 on legal fees getting this into court, and therefore, what's the point?
So with some of our clients, we then turn around and say, okay, well, if you don't enforce this, what's it saying to the rest of your staff?
Yeah.
At which point they go, oh, actually, we want to enforce this. I said, well, so it will come very much down to the approach to risk of the business owner and the approach to the way in which the person's left.
So let's talk about other elements here in terms of getting people to perform.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you stand on, and I may declare my colours in a moment, but where do you stand as far as kind of annual appraisals and that sort of thing is concerned?
It depends what you're going to do with the output of the annual appraisal. So I know some very, very large companies have done away with annual appraisals completely. But they then have no proper structure for managing bonuses or pay increases or even redundancy decisions when they go through layoffs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that gives them an exposure to risk. And again, it comes down to risk. It comes down to
But I want to talk it in this basis. This is because what we're about here now is getting the best out of people.
Yeah.
Because I would suggest in my experience, which is goes back quite a lot of years now, that the reason I don't have annual appraisals in my business is because it's not the best way to get the best out of my people, and especially it's not the best way to get the best out of my best people.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't do it. So my decision not to do it is much less to do about managing risk and much more to do with getting the upside. It's not about avoiding the downside, it's about claiming the upside.
So I was with a potential client, haven't got them yet, last week. They've got about 800 employees all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they want a performance management structure.
Okay.
And I've challenged them on exactly what you've just said. And My question is, how interested are you in looking back over the last year? It's just like looking at a set of accounts at the end of the year and saying, oh, I made a loss.
Okay.
And you're not actually managing it as you go through the year. You're not managing your cash flow.
Okay.
And it's exactly the same. So there's an argument that says, actually, sitting down in an annual appraisal and going, oh, do you remember 10 months ago when you said this to me, I didn't like it. And it's useless. There's no value in it whatsoever. You're not going to get any value.
All right.
So what's
good? Give me the good stuff.
The good stuff is looking forward and setting objectives, and that's got to come from the top down.
Mm-hmm.
So again, with this client last week, I said, if you're going to do it, then actually, the people at the top need to have their appraisals first, their objectives set first, last, because they've got to buy into the vision.
So here's how we go about this,
mm-hmm.
A number of my mastermind members do this now as well. So, in fact, we're going through this process right now, actually. We're recording this in November. And we are going through with all, I say, with all my direct reports. And the conversation goes a bit like this. It says, I've got a little job I need you to do for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I need you to do it by next Monday. And next Monday, we're going to sit down together for an hour. And you're going to come to that meeting with a piece of paper. And on that piece of paper, you're going to have written down what you believe 100% looks like.
Yep.
If you're performing, everything goes really well, what does 100% look like, mm-hmm. in your role? And I'm going to do the same thing about you and your role, ready for that meeting as well. Mm-hmm. And next Monday afternoon at 3 o'clock, we're going to sit down and we're going to compare sheets. And at the end of that meeting, we're going to go away with a single sheet that we both agreed on, which represents what success looks like.
Yep.
So we've both got clarity of what that means. Will you do that for me? And they say, well, great, I'll see you on Monday at 3 o'clock. And then we get to a project where we have now got real clarity. Mm-hmm. This is what 100% looks like. Now, it's not, just to be, this is where the finessing comes in, because it's not about, it isn't a job description,
no.
Although clearly parts of it describe what you're going to do, but it's not just about, I'm going to do this.
No.
It's about the outputs and how you're going to do it and the level and the measures, etc. Are you with me?
So smart objectives?
Yeah, well, definitely, because, you know, so if I look at, let's look at someone in our, one of our BGSMs, our business growth support managers, on PIA, for instance. Mm-hmm. So their measures, it all comes down to two things fundamentally, because it's the Net Promoter Score, the NPS score, which we talk a lot about, and their retention rate.
Mm-hmm.
Because by definition, if they've got a high NPS score and a low retention rate, everything else has to be all right, as it were. So I can get it down. Now the sheet has not just got those two things on it, although it has got those two things on it, but we now know what we're aiming towards.
Yeah.
So we are aiming towards a Net Promoter Score of this and a retention rate that is below this. And now, which we've got rid of a lot of the grey, there's always a bit of grey, but most of it's gone, and we've got some clarity. And with my direct reports, they then take that process down to their direct reports, which is what you were saying.
Yep.
And it kind of cascades down the business. And within a matter of 2 or 3 weeks, you can get to a place where everybody understands what 100% looks like for them.
Mm-hmm. Do you do the exercise where you, and I'm sure you probably do, but where you actually share your vision for 2017 with them, with the whole business? So
this is the big picture.
We're aiming to achieve.
Yeah.
Because what their 100% looks like has to be aligned with your vision.
Yes, that's very true. Yeah, otherwise they're working blind, of course.
Otherwise they're working blind.
Completely.
So
it's
about all of the staff buying into the vision.
Yeah.
Mm. And once they get that, that's where the passion and the 100% and the drive comes from.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. So, you still get issues with staff, though?
All the time.
So you've had some issues lately. You were telling me earlier.
I have. Not my staff, but my clients.
So yes, I apologise because you knew about it.
No.
Clear.
Yes.
So let's talk through some challenging ones then. So BO. I'm an expert at handling BO.
Yep, that's one that comes up quite regularly.
I'm good at handling BO. Less this time of year, in honesty. Usually in the summer. But I don't have any trouble handling that, you know. I've done that a few times.
Go on, what's your technique?
Oh, so obviously this is unimaginable, Donna, that we would have this conversation, you and I. But
just check, I put my deodorant on this morning.
So, Donna, have you got a sink? And you come in, and I don't know, there's a little problem that I need to let you know about. I said, oh. I said, it's easily fixable, but you're going to need to fix it.
Okay.
Because some of your colleagues have spoken to me about the aroma that exists around you. Do you know what I'm talking about? And typically, they get very embarrassed.
Yeah.
And I said, listen, it's easily fixable, but you're just going to have to, you know, make sure you're washing your clothes, having a shower at the end of the day, because then the issue will go away. Is that all right? Can you do that for me? And usually having that chat. I can think of that's happened three times in my career over quite a long, not all this summer, just to be clear. and I think in every occasion, just addressing it.
We probably have one a year amongst our clients coming to us and say, how do I tell them that they've got, you know, BO problem or greasy hair or, you know, sometimes it's their clients that have asked them to remove them from the premises and it becomes then that third party issue.
Yeah.
So that's quite a common one.
You've had a knicker smelling problem, I guess.
We had a knicker smelling problem and it's really...
You have to describe this to me. What?
So...
How does that manifest itself? I'm cringing. I can't believe the podcast has plumbed new depths.
A... young man,
yes,
who goes into people's rented properties to check, you know, every 6 months, does an inspection.
No.
We actually think it was a setup. We actually think that he was set up.
Mm.
But he went into quite a small property and he'd been asked to check certain things. And as he went into the property, there was a clothes horse. Actually, no one can see me waving my hands around, so I'll try not to. There was a clothes horse laid out with loads of underwear and he'd been asked to check out the windowsills and the cracks on the walls. So he tried to manoeuvre his way around this clothes horse. And in doing so, managed to knock off a load of stuff, which he picked up, and according to him, and there is two sides to every story, he picked it up and put it back on the clothes horse.
Okay.
At that point, his employer got a phone call from the tenant saying, get that man out of my flat. And she'd rigged up a video camera.
Okay.
And she could see him, but it then became her word... because she'd seen it on video against his word, but she didn't record it. Apparently she went to the police and the employer was in a really, really difficult situation because they'd never had any complaints about this employee before. It was very much his word against her word. But we got him in.
Yeah.
We did a disciplinary investigation and he went through exactly what had happened. But he also had picked up some of her medication, which actually... he shouldn't have done, and she complained about that as well. So he ended up getting a verbal warning.
Other issues then? What about, because in my experience, when you've got problems, I always work with staff, you have long term pain or short term pain.
Yep.
And the short term pain comes from the discomfort of having to deal with things.
Yes.
And have conversations, and I have to say, as over the years, I've just got more. I don't have any qualms about tackling issues anymore.
Yeah.
And I used to have quite a lot of issues. You're trying to avoid having the difficult conversations, but it has to be done.
What we find with smaller businesses and the owners of those small businesses is that people treat each other as friends, and there is a friendship that forms, even if it's informally, that becomes much more difficult to manage than in a large organisation.
Yeah.
So things that would never be allowed in a large organisation are very easily, it's just
like
the way they are. Things like perhaps drinking at the desk, like having beers at the desk, and in an NHS.
We have Friday beers here.
Friday beers is fine.
Okay.
Good.
I wasn't asking permission.
No. I remember when we used to have beer bust every Friday afternoon, and beers and pizzas used to arrive.
Okay.
So in the particular organisation I'm thinking of, the alcohol is available at the bar in the office, supplied by. All the time. And they have a lot of clients that come in and like a glass of champagne or a glass of beer. But the staff tend to help themselves to it as well.
Okay.
And they have actually introduced a curfew.
Okay.
So everybody is meant to be off the premises on a Friday night at 9 o'clock. However, at 9 o'clock. However, at 11:30 at night, There were several members of staff still there, rather paralytic.
Okay.
And what followed wasn't pretty.
No.
And a series of text messages were then followed.
Okay.
And the business owners didn't want to deal with it because they wanted to be seen as the nice guys. But when we actually started talking to members of staff who'd been offended by what had happened, it was, well, they always take a soft approach. They never deal with anything. And there were accusations of bullying, sexual harassment. And the business owners actually have been forced to be really strict on this and to take a really hard line never dealt with it in the past.
But as business owners, you can't be... You can't be friends.
No, very hard.
There has to be. HR. There has to be a gap, doesn't there? There has to be a gap.
So I learned that lesson really hard, probably about 16 years ago, where an MD came in. He said to me, "I want that person fired by the end of the day. I want them gone. I never want to see them again." Okay, thank you very much. He and his wife were at my 30th birthday party last weekend, and I did. I just had to deal with it. And actually, my manager then saw and heard what I was doing, knew that it was someone that I was fairly friendly with, and said to me, "Are you okay?" And the only reason I was okay is actually because I knew that that person wasn't happy.
Yeah, it has to be the business. It's business decisions.
A business decision, it's about how you do it. It's about taking people aside and
this is
having
where,
the conversation. It's not the what you do. I've made 250 people redundant and had hugs and kisses for doing so. I've made one person redundant.
Yes.
And that can go completely. You know, it's how you do it. It's.
But taking responsibility and ownership as the business owner is really, really key, isn't
it?
We've got two more things to cover. We've only got 5 minutes left here. We need to talk about firing people, my favourite topic. And you want to talk about rewarding them, apparently. Apparently we have to reward people.
You have to reward them. So rewards can either be individual awards or collective awards.
Mm-hmm.
And they can either be to do with the relationship or they can be transactional. So an individual transaction is when you pay somebody their salary.
Okay.
Right? A collective relationship.
Don't go all corporate bollocks.
I'm not. Collective relationships when you bring in pizza on a Friday afternoon.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
And you make the workplace. Oh, I'm going to use my own catchphrase here. You make the workplace a nice place to be.
Okay.
So you've got. You know, nice toilet facilities, you've got a bright place, there's lots of light, people can go for a walk at lunchtime, people can, and that's about the relationship, and that's what makes people want to come and work in that environment, and that's the reward that they get. And when somebody goes for a job, this is happening more and more in the city firms in London, people will look at what they're getting in terms of that relationship from their employer, as well as what's in their pay packet.
Yeah, and I know that's true, but only to an extent, isn't it? I mean, I think in my own experience, you know, I've had people that have been paid particularly well. You know, they've had particularly nice cars, particularly nice little perks that I've provided, trip to certain places and things like this. But at the end of the day, if something comes along that they want more, they'll go still. It doesn't
necessarily prevent them.
It's not a panacea. That's the point. Yeah.
But
you can effectively waste a lot of money as a business owner. And I think over the years I've perhaps done this to some extent. I do want to create. I do want my people to work in a nice environment. I do want to do good things. I enjoy as a business owner. It's nice being able to send people somewhere, whether it's a concert or a holiday, or just do things because I can. And if I paid them the money, they wouldn't spend it on that. They'd like pay down the credit card or something or whatever.
Something boring.
Yeah, but I enjoy being able to do that for people. But I'm not. I never kid myself that I'm buying anything more than very. Very temporary, superficial
so
kind of loyalty.
I got called into a company to understand why they had probably a 60% staff turnover. He just could not keep his staff.
Was this Caldwell?
No.
Oh.
And he kept turning around and saying to me, "But I buy them breakfast. I spend £400 a week on food in the office.
Yeah.
I get a weekly order of from Tesco's or Ocado, whatever it was. Why aren't they staying?" And I thought, well, I could tell you the answer, but actually let me go and speak to your staff. So we held focus groups and we did two focus groups. And what came out of that was absolutely damning about the business owner. And actually, they didn't care about the food that was being provided. They didn't care about the bread and the cereal and the milk and the freshly squeezed oranges and the smoothies. And they actually wanted to be patted on the back and told when they'd done a good job. They didn't want to be yelled and screamed at. And they didn't want to be working for somebody who was working on three businesses at a time and asking them to cover all three of his businesses when they were only employed by one.
Okay.
And
just to be clear, it's not me.
It wasn't, not at all. No, no. Someone down in London, and you're very definitely Birmingham. No, it definitely wasn't you. And I don't think you spend £400 a week
on Tesco delivery. No, that's very true.
But for him,
yeah,
it was all about
what he had
in, and he didn't understand that it was more than that.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, there is, you mentioned earlier in this chat the similarity when you come into with people to marketing or hiring people and finding them. It's all about selling opportunity, and to some extent this bit is the same as well as marketing, because with marketing your ability to connect with your customer depends on your ability to put yourself in their shoes and understand them from things from their perspective. And the same is true when it comes to actually understanding your staff. Your ability to see the world, you may not agree with how they see it, but to accurately understand how they see the world and the things that are important to them and what matters will play a big part. So I think your kind of organisational empathy and ability to understand it will be a big factor here.
And sometimes people will work for you, as long as they're earning enough to live on, they'll work for you for less money.
Yes, that's true.
Than if they buy into the dream and they buy into the culture and you're close to home and you give them flexible working and you actually care, than if they had to travel into central London, for example, they could be earning 10 grand more, but they could never see their kids and they could never... And that makes a huge difference.
What it is, I remember when the London Olympics, obviously over four years ago now, but the big stars of the London Olympics weren't the athletes or the sportsmen at all. It was the games makers. And as someone that went to a lot of events at the London Olympics and saw a lot of games makers, none of them were being paid, of course. No. It was an entirely voluntary role. And I remember writing an article about why you should pay your staff nothing. And the logic, because people were doing the games making, I know it was the Olympics, it's in London, so it's a completely extreme example. But at the end of the day, they wanted to be there, and the fulfillment that they got from it was tremendous. You know, the enjoyment they got from it met so many of their kind of needs, in inverted commas. And this is actually what it comes down to. When arguably the biggest reward you could give anybody when you employ them is to give them a job in which they're able to do the thing that they're best at in an environment that they enjoy and
that they feel valued.
That's the point. And so these things all do, they're actually a lot more important. And the thing is, we all know this. This is not like a radical kind of, oh my God, what an amazing podcast.
It's about trying to find it.
Yes, and that's the key. Because most people don't even bother trying to look.
And it will be different for every single member of staff that you have.
That's the other big thing. It is different for everybody. And it is different things in different works.
But then I'm going to go corporate on you again. You've got to be careful not to discriminate.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay, fine.
Because...
But I can if there's differences in performance.
Yes, you can. And as long as it's objective and as long as...
And there's the thing, isn't it, with HR. And we're going to have to wrap this up in a moment because we're going to run out of space on the CD.
Okay.
And I don't want to cut you off in your prime. But the reality with HR is, I mean, the truth of it is, you can do what you want with people, providing you're prepared to pay the price.
Yes.
Now, the price can be paid in a number of different ways.
Yeah.
It can be paid by effective processes and documentation and doing the right things, or it can be paid by writing a check, or indeed there's other places.
And in America,
the scale.
If they want to get rid of somebody, they literally walk in and put a check down on the table. There is no other process to follow. And I alluded before when I made 250 people redundant, a team came over from the US to support that process because they were an American company, and they could not believe what we had to go through in terms of a legal process here. In the US, if they want someone gone...
Yeah.
Now, I have...
But that's not very helpful for our members because there's no one in America listening to this.
No, that's because you haven't got your empire out there yet. But in the UK, there is a process you have to follow when you want to get rid of somebody, and that can be that you pay them enough money.
Yeah.
And I would just say, if you're going to do that, make sure
compromise
that the
agreement.
Settlement agreement.
Settlement agreement.
Settlement agreement now. Yes, it used to be called a compromise agreement. So a settlement agreement, you have a protected conversation.
Yeah, that's a process that you go through, isn't it?
It is.
You have a conversation, then it all gets documented. They effectively sign away all their rights.
Yeah.
And when they've done that, you pay them some money.
Almost all their rights.
Yeah, okay.
There are some they can't get sign away, but practically everything else can be. Basically, it means they can't take you to an employment tribunal. Mm-hmm. Some people will actually wait until they have an employment tribunal claim against them and then aim to settle it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they kind of, in a way, they hedge their bets
mm-hmm.
that the person won't actually bring a claim. Other people want to get it over and done with and not have it hanging around for 3 months, which is potentially the time window. So the other way to do it, and it depends why you're getting rid of people, but it's to start a disciplinary process.
Okay.
And if somebody has the choice of being disciplined or walking out with 3 months' money, then they might prefer to walk out with 3 months' money. Whereas if you go in straight away with a settlement agreement, they're going to ask for 6 months' money or 9 months' money. So actually, it can be worth just starting to go down that disciplinary route. In effect, it's your carrot and your stick.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take disciplinary action against you. This is what we're going to do. This is the basis for it. Come to your meeting. However, you then move off the record and have that conversation with the settlement agreement.
Good advice. So hopefully we've covered a lot of space here.
With
hindsight, we could probably have split this over a couple of sessions. But I know you've had a lot of help to a lot of members of EC, a lot of businesses that you support. If people want to talk to you, Donna, about problems or challenges they've got with their staff, how can they do that?
Probably the easiest thing is to email me. So it's donna@dohr.co.
Oh, Donna! Sorry.
Okay, well, we're going to skip that Christmas carol singing, if that's what it sounds like.
Okay.
Okay. So donna@dohr.co.uk.
dohr.co.uk.
Okay. That's probably the easiest way.
Okay.
Or I believe my phone number is in the trust,
and
is
you're
in
all,
the
and, yeah,
circular.
And you're at all our national events and things, and you're very well. I mean, she puts it about, does Donna, got to tell you, honestly, she's
and
everywhere.
And I'm always purple, so I'm easy to find.
That is very true, isn't it? Yeah,
I am.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look, even my shoes.
Okay, well, again, this on the podcast, the colour of your shoes has a small
They'll
impact
to
play.
They'll be able to see it if they come to the National.
But listen, that's been really helpful today, a really interesting conversation, and I hope everyone listening has got something at least out of that, and perhaps just made me think a little bit more about the potential and the possibilities here, because as I said at the beginning, at the end of the day, we all need people, and the truth of it is, no matter how challenging some people are, there are some fantastic people out there, and I know for all the challenges I've had, and goodness me, there have been many over the years in many different guises, but I wouldn't have swapped it for anything. The prospect of it just being me as a one-man band would have diminished so much what I could achieve, and the same is almost certainly true for you. So thanks for joining us, Jonna. We are back and back next year. Can't believe we're saying
2017.
That 2017. I know. And in January, with a special birthday podcast.
Ooh, how old are you?
I am a January baby. That's 51. And but a special birthday podcast coming in January. Got a couple of little surprises on there for you. So I will see you then. In the meantime, have a great December. Happy Christmas. And
Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year.
To those that celebrate.
Ho, ho, ho.
You've been listening to The Podcast from the Entrepreneur's Circle, featuring Nigel Bottrell. The Podcast is copyright Entrepreneur's Circle 2015.